Well, hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Financial 50. This is the podcast of financial advice that gives you what you need to know in 50 minutes or less. I'm your host, Ashley Nichols, and with me as always is co-host and senior wealth advisor, Stephen Biddle. Say hi, Stephen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting call.
It is very exciting. We're all excited to be here. We had a few technical difficulties in the last episode, so hopefully we've worked around a few of them. Now, we record these episodes on a monthly basis, and you can find all of them on our website at www.biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca. It's under the newsletters, podcasts, and videos tab. And you can go to that podcast page and listen to all of our past episodes, where you can find advice ranging from RESPs to taxes and your investments and just so much more, so many topics that we cover. And each episode has something great to learn from, so they're all worth a listen. Now, if you have some burning financial questions and you want us to answer them, you can send any questions you might have my way to my email. That's at ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. Now, last month, although I did mention we had some technical difficulties, we're able to begin the conversation of insurance and how it can benefit you further than just covering simple things like car and home repairs. Amanda gave us some great information on mortgage insurance and how the banks do it a little differently, how group insurance may not give you the disability coverage that you think it will, and how critical illness insurance coverage can be more extensive with outside insurance providers. Now, Amanda is back again with us today, and we're going to talk more on the family side of the insurance world. Insurance is an important topic to think about when it comes to your kids, and not just your human kids, also the non-human kids, the fuzzy kids. So thanks for coming back again today, Amanda. We really appreciate you coming in.
Excellent. Thanks so much for having me again, and especially allowing me to talk about my two favorite things, which are insurance and furry family.
Yes, the furry family, you know what? They've become such a huge part in the last like few years. Such a huge part of everyone's family. So, you know, we're really glad that you can come and chat about, chat about all this with us. So let's get this episode going. Amanda's coming in a bit clearer than last time, which is great. So let's start the Q&A. I'm going to start us off by asking the first question. Now, Amanda, when it comes to our kids, we know that saving for their education is a really big priority. And with the cost of living increasing, a lot of kids are staying home a lot longer so that they don't fall into deep debt. So how can insurance help us to help our kids when it comes to their first big steps into adulthood?
For sure. Thanks, Ashley. I think this kind of comes down to really two things. So the first thing is you really want to have enough insurance on yourself, probably for a little bit longer than what we would have traditionally thought about, you know, even 20 years ago. So the kind of the school of thought then was, well, I need to make sure I have a bunch of insurance on myself that if something happens to me before my kids are, call it 18 or 20, that they're going to be okay. We've got enough money for their education and to help support them. But around that time, they're going to become fairly self-sufficient. So, you know, mom, dad probably don't need quite as much insurance at that time. But I think that's changed quite a bit. Oftentimes now kids stay at home for longer. So maybe they're staying at home while they go to school, or they're leaving for school and then actually coming back when they're done, and just being financially dependent upon mom and dad for a little bit longer than what they would have previously. The second thing is too, is that, you know, we have a great tool here in Canada, RESPs, to help save for our education for kids. But depending on what type of schooling that they're looking at, is that might not be quite enough to save in order to kind of tax efficiently help them with their education costs. If they're going to schooling for to be a lawyer, to be a doctor, they've got many, many years of school ahead of them, might not quite be enough. And actually insuring your kids and getting them something like a whole life policy may be able to help generate some tax efficient savings to help pay for those costs of education later on down the road.
Okay, and when you're talking about whole life insurance policies here, what exactly are you talking about for the kids, and how young would you do it, and you know, whose life is it insured on and all that fun stuff? Like, how does that work?
The technical side.
Ooh, the technical side. So from a technical standpoint, you can pretty much insure kids between 15 and 30 days old. We're able to get insurance on them. So who would be insured is the actual child. Who would be the owner is either mom and dad or potentially grandma and grandpa. We're able to roll that insurance over to the children once they reach the age of majority, tax-free. So mom and dad or grandma and grandpa can invest into this whole life policy, which would have a growing investment component that the kids can use later on down the road. Think for things like education, maybe down payment on their first house, retirement. And really, it's the idea is, too, that the insurance benefit would be there to actually go a generation down further and be there to support their kids. So it's some really interesting family planning that we can do to make sure our wealth is continuing to pass from generation to generation.
That sounds really interesting. One thing I would ask, when you say they can use it, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with a whole life policy, but, you know, so grandparents put money in there, it's growing over time. When you said the kids can use it, how do they use it?
So there's one of a few ways they can use it. So as we mentioned, there's an investment component to whole life, which means there's a growing cash value in there. There's a few different ways that once that ownership passes to the kids. So I guess a key thing to note here is that grandma and grandpa or mom and dad are going to retain control of that investment until they decide to pass the ownership down to the kids. So this is also a great way for them to keep control until maybe, you know, the kids are a little bit past that stage where they might not use the funds in a way that we would think is best. So we can really kind of maintain that control on it. But once the ownership is in the kids' hands, is they can take a withdrawal out of the policy. By doing that, they're going to give up a little bit of the insurance on there, and they may have some tax to pay on it. The other option is they can take a loan directly with the policy. They don't give up the insurance on that, but there would be interest charged on the amount that they take out. They can just keep accumulating that interest inside the policy, and there could be a little bit of tax on that. The other option is that they can actually do a collateral loan against the policy as well. So they could go to a lender, like, for example, our private bank here, or there's a number of lenders that specialize in insurance lending, and they'll give them a loan against the cash surrender value of the policy as well. There's a couple other benefits in there, too, that they might be able to access it that way. But those, I'd say, were the top three ways that you can get access to an investment component of your whole life policy.
And I guess, sorry to interrupt you there, Ashley, I saw you breathe. But the nice thing about it, too, is one thing people forget about life insurance policies is the ability to get insured, right? So, you know, most young kids, we'll call them, in little quotation marks, whatever age you want to call the kid, are insurable, right? Most are. And then, like you said, they're getting into a position when, as they get older, your chances of being insured kind of decrease because as you get older, you frequently get sicker. So these kids are basically insured already, right? And then, like you said, down the road, all of a sudden, they don't have to be at 30 years old and they have their kids going, okay, now we need to buy life insurance. So we're covered for the kids and, I've got something wrong with me. So I'm paying more than I would have. And you've already got that in place, right?
Yeah,
for sure. And actually, you know, I'm kind of the prime example of this as well. I have, you know, some pretty severe family medical history when it comes to cancer and heart disease. So while I've been perfectly healthy myself, if I were to go out and ask for insurance nowadays, the chances of me getting it are, you know, to be quite frank, not that great. And if I were to be able to get it right now, I would have to pay more than the person beside me who's the exact same age and health, just due to even my family medical history here. However, my parents had purchased a small insurance policy on me when I was just a couple of years old, and it actually had a guaranteed insurability rider on it as well. So even now, every 2 years, I get a letter in the mail saying, hey, would you like to buy some more insurance? And pretty much every time I take it up because, you know, who else gets excited about more insurance but me? And so it's been a way that even though I would have a lot of trouble getting an insurance policy in place on me today, that I'm still able to get insurance in place at the rates as if I was completely healthy and didn't have that family medical history there. And you know what? At one point, I used that cash surrender value in the policy as well to help out with some expenses just as I was coming out of school. And, you know, realizing how expensive it was to be an adult. So it really was a way to kind of get the best of all worlds there.
That's great, especially when you know it works, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. you had also just touched on something there. You know, as we talk about kids, probably one of the biggest issues with younger adults isn't passing away. It's getting sick, right? Or injured. Like, what? How does, you know, an example, you know, can you get critical illness for the kids? Or, you know, what other things can you do to possibly help the kids out if you have excess funds?
Absolutely. So for minor children, I love looking at critical illness for them as well. And the reason being is that, again, you know, just even based on my own example there, I can't get critical illness anymore. So it's something that keeps me up at night, knowing that this is something that is, you know, more likely than the person beside me to happen to me, and I can't get more insurance in place. We can get insurance in place for critical illness on young children. If something were to happen to them, even while they're a minor, the insurance is there. You know, I think if your child was to get sick, Ashley, Stephen, I'm sure it'd be safe to say if your child was sick, you wouldn't be coming into work tomorrow.
Oh, definitely not.
You'd
of course.
Sitting there
yeah.
beside them. So it gives you as the parent that just that flexibility and that relief that there's no financial pressure, that you can be there with your child throughout whatever they may go through. And ideally, we never ever use it for that purpose.
Sorry to interrupt you. Also, in some of these critical illness policies, there's a certain period of time that if you don't get critically ill, you actually get your money back, don't you, on some of them?
Bingo.
Am I correct on that? Because, you know, I should know it a little. I've got critical illness insurance, right? And I think it was for, would it be like 15 years or something, is that kind of it is? Or a certain number of time, and if actually nothing happens, you actually get your money back. So it's like we're... other than the accumulated interest or growth you would have had, but that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. So, and you can do that for children as well. Each of the providers do it a little bit differently. So sometimes it's after that 15 years. Sometimes it's after age 35, is they can say, you know what, I don't want the insurance anymore. I just want to take my entire investment back. They give you every dollar that you put in. It's a complete return of capital with no penalties.
I guess it makes sense. So it makes sense, right? Because they didn't do anything for the money. So
yeah,
why should they not give you your money back? But anyway.
So my mm-hmm. question with that, though, now is that is only conditional if you never make a claim on the critical insurance, or if, like, if you had to make a small one, but it doesn't take up all of the money that you've put towards the policy, do you get the leftovers back?
Great question, Ashley. So normally critical illness policies have a couple of different benefits. There's our traditional covered conditions, normally somewhere between 24 and 25, depending on the carrier. And let's say you purchase a $100,000 benefit. If you were to make a claim under one of those conditions, so think life-threatening cancer, you're going to get that $100,000 paid out. At that time, the policy kind of dissolves. And in that case, they wouldn't get the return of capital. But all policies have an early intervention benefit, or each one calls a little bit different, but really it's an early claim benefit. And that's where they catch something really early on. So think in that one, the one I always like to use an example of is angioplasty. So angioplasty, you're in and out of the hospital within a couple hours. They basically just put a little catheter up your veins, clear any blockages that you might have in some arteries. You're in and out very quickly. It's just a day procedure. That is going to pay you out a small benefit, generally somewhere between 15 to 25%. Again, each carrier varies a little bit. And if you made a claim under one of those early conditions, most of the carriers then don't count that towards your return of premium. So you could still get that full return of capital if you had only made a claim under one of those conditions.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. Because, yeah, that's the one thing is, you know, if it's just something very small and then you have to give up all of the, you know, the critical illness. I mean, that's not to say that that would deter you because, of course, insurance is there for that cushion. But it's an added benefit if you can, you know, still get a little bit back when it's not as critical. It's, you know, it's just stage one, you know, not like stage red.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's those kids. But as we know, a lot of us have these furry kids, right? You know, COVID was the perfect example. It's like everyone's at home, so let's go buy our COVID dogs and cats, right? And I know with that, there's this whole thing called pet insurance, which, you know, for disclosure, we bought a dog during COVID and we done pet insurance. I'll get your 10 cents worth on it, but it's literally once a year we get this thing saying, hey, by the way, we're cranking the amount that you're paying. So I'll let you just talk about the pet insurance, you know, how does it work? And is it just through like the major pet companies like Trupanion and all those different things?
Yeah, for sure. So first disclaimer, I'm not licensed to sell pet insurance and I'm not endorsing one carrier over the other. But as you know, Stephen and Ashley, I am the cat lady. I love my cats very, very much. And I wasn't a huge believer in pet insurance for cats previously. So I've always owned a cat. And in the many, many years that I've been financially responsible for a cat on my own, until about 2020, I can say, you know, outside of regular maintenance vet bills, I had spent maybe $1,000 or $2,000 on vet bills over, you know, probably close to a 20-year span. But I had this cat, Lloyd, and I loved him to pieces. We were best buddies. And unfortunately, during COVID, he got very, very, very sick. And it wasn't like we went into the vet one day and they had a $10,000 bill. It was, here's $1,000, here's $500, here's $1,000, another $500. And it just kept accumulating and snowballing. And so I started looking into the pet insurance a little deeper. I also ended up adopting a cat that I had fostered who had numerous health issues. And coming from the insurance world, one of the things that I was a little bit concerned about was pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I'd read those contracts kind of back to front, knew pre-existing conditions were excluded, and this little guy had a bunch of pre-existing conditions, so I didn't buy the pet insurance. And of course, he decided that he was going to be the cat that ate everything that was inedible. And once again, wild amounts of vet bills there. So I have to say I've shifted my beliefs. I am certainly a believer in pet insurance nowadays, even for cats, because there is a lot of things and situations they can get themselves into where you do have the potential to make a claim. So I know Trupanion's a big one. I think we got ours through Costco because they had a pretty good discount for it.
Sorry, you said through Costco?
Yeah, Costco has pet insurance.
Costco has. I was about to say Costco has everything. Good lord!
But they only insure you if you have 25 or more dogs.
Yeah, yeah, they have to buy them in bulk.
Exactly. If you just have one animal, they just say no, we can't do that. You have to have a bulk.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Amanda says, a lot of the pet insurance, it does depend on your breed and what it is. And the variation is huge among cost, right? And, you know, some of them have deductibles. Some of them don't have deductibles. Some of them have one-time deductible for a certain illness. So let's say you have a dog and he all of a sudden has a severe allergy to something.
Yeah.
Well, once they figure that out, if he still has those things, some will keep on covering it.
Oh.
Others kind of say, we cover this many a year, or this is a deductible year.
Okay.
You know, for people who have pets, they know how expensive things are. You know, friends of ours, literally a couple of weeks ago, there was nothing wrong with the dog, and all of a sudden in the morning, it couldn't get up. And they took it to the doctor, and he basically had cancer, right? And it literally was going to cost at least $10,000.
Oh my God. That's
crazy. And they literally, they didn't have the money.
Oh yeah. Right? I mean, who nowadays does? I mean,
but it costs you that for nothing. Like, yeah. You know, you have a dog breaks its leg.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's $5,000-$6,000. So yeah.
Before we move on, my one question that I really wanted to know is, under these pet insurance policies, what kind of pets are covered? Obviously cats and dogs, but we know that some people get a little unconventional with their pets. Some people get ferrets, some people get fish, birds, spiders, lizards. Like, so how extensive does it get with pet insurance?
I don't have a clue. I've only heard of dog and cat.
Okay. So someone, please, whoever listens to this, please do a Google search and please email me and let me know, because I'd love to know if I one day decided I want a Komodo dragon, if I'm going to have to fill out money to keep it alive one day.
I think you probably have to have insurance to make sure it doesn't eat the neighbor's kids. Yeah. I think that's a bigger problem.
That's just lawsuit protection.
Yeah, lawsuit. But yeah, having goldfish as a previous multiple goldfish owner, I don't think they insure goldfish.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's a little silly. Maybe that's silly.
You know, you can find someone anywhere that will insure anything. So could you find it? Sure, you could. Would it be in the realm of affordability? I don't know, but...
would it be worth it? I don't know.
Then I guess when we're looking at our little furry friends, on our questions, I have something called pet nups. Is that like a prenup, or like what happens when you get divorced? Who gets the pet? Like, is that what that is?
Yeah. It's exactly that.
Oh, it's getting big. It's getting big. It's like people don't fight for the kids. It's like, no, I don't care who has the kids. It's like, who gets the dog?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I've noticed. And I don't know if the two of you have noticed. But do you have or know anybody that now shares the custody of pets?
I do know someone. I know a few people who share custody of cats.
Yeah, I've noticed this more and more, just anecdotally amongst people that I know, where, you know, the cat and dog go back and forth with the kids, too. Or the cat and dog just go back and forth between the two. And so it's really interesting, and I'm going to nerd out a little bit here, is that pets are technically considered property.
Sorry, and you said so, are? Sorry to interrupt. You said are or are not?
They are. So okay. Pets are property. So same as if you were arguing over, you know, who owns this sofa. They're going to look at who purchased this, who's the true owner of this. And just like the sofa, where they're not going to say, well, you know, you sat on this more and you took better care of it, we're going to give custody of the sofa to this spouse or that spouse. Pets are very similar. So they're going to look at who's the actual owner of the pet. So who paid for it, signed the adoption papers, paid the breeder, who did the primary caregiving for it and took care of it. And really, a judge can't rule and say, you know, Ashley, you're the better cat mom or dog mom, or Steven, you're the better dog dad, so you get the dog. Although that is slightly changing. And just earlier this year, BC now is starting to look at pets a little bit differently, where judges may actually be able to rule on custody of them. But across the rest of Canada, they are still considered property. And so they can't really do that. So what a pet nup does is it says, okay, the cat is mine, or the cat is yours. And if we are to ever split up, I get to keep that cat, or you get to keep that cat. And it's defined out in that agreement kind of right from the start, same as you may do with any property or investments or assets that you're bringing into a relationship, with a cohabitation agreement or, you know, a prenuptial agreement. So these pet nups are really starting to take off nowadays because, you know, pets, I think, have become a much bigger part of our family than, say, 30 or 40 years ago, where existed in our house, but now they're really our babies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there, and also you have more people not having kids at all and just having their fur babies, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Right. And then, and I guess the other side of it is, you know, we all always seen the little, you know, joke or the humor where, you know, the multimillionaire lady passes away and leaves her entire estate to Fido, and, you know, and is, does that happen? Can you like literally set up stuff so if both of you pass, like say for you, Amanda, you don't have kids, you pass away, can you leave like a trust for, you know, I don't know if Lloyd's still around, but whoever your guys are now to be looked after.
The Aristocats, the Aristocat scenario.
Yeah. So it's Olivia and Philip right now. And so, yes, absolutely. You can provide for your pets in a will. Now, you can't take an insurance policy, and I can't name Olivia as the beneficiary of it. But in my will, and of course, I practice what I preach, in my will, my pets, and I did keep it generic very specifically because we often tend to outlive our pets, right? So I did keep it very specifically as a pet. They have a trust fund, so that money goes into trust for them. I named a trustee. I also had that conversation with the trustee beforehand,
right,
to make sure that if something were to happen to me, that they're willing to take on that responsibility. And, you know, of course, it's somebody who I think would be a great cat mom, who is my niece. So she is the trustee. She gets these funds to help take care of the cat if anything's to happen to me. So that's there to pay for food, vet bills, etc. That money is set aside for the cat and made sure that they're well taken care of, because I care about what happens to my cat if I'm not here to take care of it. I don't want her to end up in the pound. I want to make sure that everything's good and she's able to continue living her best life. And if you want to look up a really interesting one, but Karl Lagerfeld's cat is locked up in quite a big estate battle.
What?
I believe it's about $280 million that he left towards Choupette. Now, the lawyer or executor has disappeared, the last that I had looked this up. And so she hasn't got her money yet. But not to worry, because she does get a lot of royalties from, you know, the different merchandise that she has. So she's still able to pay her nannies and her chef and make sure she's able to have her very special silver dishware, or I don't know, maybe platinum dishware that she gets for this amount of money.
So after talking about this, the one thing that really comes into my mind, and I don't know if you had this, did you have the conversation with your pets at the time? And now that they're trust pets, do they have attitudes and they don't want to like go for a walk or work anymore, and you know, they feel kind of gifted and have an elitist attitude, you know, because we hear about these trust fund kids, right? You have the trust fund, you know they go to the dog park and they just look at the other guys and go like, no. Is that what happens?
How many of these pets get drug addictions, basically, once their trust funds, yes, like get enacted? How many of them are fluting around the world, partying it up, living the life?
Well, I've heard Amanda's cats are going through like a bale and a half of catnip a month, so I don't know.
All I'm saying is Lloyd was a very cuddly boy, and he knew how to pay his rent. Olivia, she might not get that trust fund if she doesn't smarten up. I might have to change my will.
I know. You've had the discussion with them, right?
Yeah. She's not earning her share of the bargain here. Yeah. So
you can always take her for a drive by the pound, let her look out the window, say, smarten up.
Yeah. This is where you'll be.
Just have to show her that commercial that they used to have on years ago, for whatever that shelter was, and they used to play it all the time during daytime TV, and by the end of it you'd be bawling with all these poor animals and these poor
in the rain. I know, and they're all like, yeah, looking at you like, oh
yeah,
yeah. Is Sarah McLachlan,
yeah,
pen?
Oh, exactly, that one always, yeah. Don't do it. Oh, it's, I'm tearing up, quick, we gotta finish.
I know, those furry friends, man, they pull at our heartstrings sometimes more than like the human kids. I don't know what it is, but man, furry friends, furry kids.
So Stephen, have you thought about this in the past for your furry family member? Does Maui does he have a trust fund set up?
No,
yet?
No, he doesn't, yes, but maybe that's something I have to look into. I'll just talk to Maui, and if he agrees, I'll just, you know, write off the two kids and they don't get anything. I'll put one of them as the executor and they have to look after him.
I'm sure your kids wouldn't mind. I'm sure they'd happily take that.
Yeah, no, he's good from that side.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is crazy. So just I myself have never been a pet owner. That's just so all of this information is totally new to me. And as someone who hopes to one day be a future pet owner, like when my kids grow up and are sick of me and I need something else to love me unconditionally, that's when I will get my pet. And I'll be sure, Amanda, to come to you with all of my questions, because I think you are the one that's going to be able to answer them with, you know, the most experience.
I might.
So yeah, I mean, really, the information in the insurance world, it just keeps coming, and it just seems like there's so many different avenues that you can go down with insurance, and it can affect every aspect of your life. So, Amanda, thank you so much again for joining us. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to be on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me and allowing me to talk about my two favorite things, which are insurance and pets, of course. I really appreciate being here.
Now, I know for everyone who's listening, we had promised a little financial planning and insurance planning, joining forces for the forces of good for holistic wealth management in this episode. However, we're going to have to table that discussion until about the summer months when we can kind of get our technical stuff a bit more sorted out. So definitely stay tuned for those episodes to come out around that June, July, August time period. Now, as I mentioned before, if you have any questions about insurance, especially now this pet insurance, now, as Amanda said, she's not licensed to be able to offer the pet insurance, but she can certainly answer any questions that you might have regarding it. We're more than happy to answer your questions, and you can send any of those to my email. And again, that's at ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. You can also go to our website at any time, biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca, to listen to past episodes, gather up some questions, and like I say, send me a list. We love answering questions. It's our favorite thing to do. And thank you guys again for coming in and spending some time with us. And thanks to everyone who's listening for tuning into another episode of the Financial 50. Have a wonderful day, and we will chat at you next time. Say goodbye, everybody.
See you later, everyone. And as Bob Barker used to say, remember to get your cats and dogs spayed and neutered.